Dear Shooter, you can buy the absolute top-of-the-line gear, and it can still frustrate you to no end. This doesn't make the gear bad. It just means you need to know what you're getting into.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip
weird.
On. It's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe. Nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Deer Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
Oh, must mean it's Thursday. And, you know, I am absolutely so sick of the news and the doom and gloom and... Wilson, you walked in here tonight on a rant, and I love it, because let's talk about gear.
Yes, please. I tell you what, I have had a heck of a week, this week and last week, really, trying to get gear ready for an event we're having.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that a little bit next week.
Yeah. So I focused on my HKVP9.
Mm-hmm.
It's got... all the bells and whistles on this thing, pretty much out of the box.
Because that's the VP9 Tactical.
That's correct. And it's quite a fine pistol. The fit and finish on it is everything you would expect from HK.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But being an optics guy, and I've got a new prototype in my hands, I want to take the cap plate off and put an RMR plate on and put an optic on it and... play with it, right?
Yeah, of course. That's what we all want to do.
Okay, so why do not the screws that are appropriate for the plate come with the goddamn plate?
Worse yet, why doesn't HK provide, you know, two or three different base plates with the gun?
Sure.
Because, well, I'll tell you why. Because they can charge you $60 a pop for them.
Well, then that's where I'm going next. So, you know, you pop this thing off, and you're like, all right, I've got an RMR footprint.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
None of my stores carry that shit.
No.
So I hop online, and I find the VP9's RMR plate. Well, there's three versions of that son of a bitch, by the way.
That I didn't know.
There's one footprint. It's an RMR footprint. It's kind of standardized.
Right.
So I choose the number 2.
Right? Okay.
This plate shows up without any screws.
Oh.
So I am now using the screws that came out of the cap plate to fit this plate. And they work just fine.
Right. And I think they're designed to, but still. Right.
They should come with a set of screws.
You would think.
They don't. So I get the plate put on. I get the optic fit to the plate. Everything's looking good. I set the 632 screw through the hole, and it gets about a half a turn, and it starts to bind up.
Because it's not 632.
Well, as a gunsmith, I go, okay, that's a stop sign.
Yep.
All right, so I back up, and I take the optic off. And now I am going through my assortment of screws, because I have more than a few.
Which is from hell, by the way.
I have
a million of them all over the place.
Yeah.
Are they at least sorted?
No.
Oh, no. I know where they all
it's
are.
It's over here and over there. That's
no, I'm just talking, you know, you open the little plastic drawer and it's just all mash of screws or...
Well, they're not in one bin all in the same place, but they're like in magnetic dishes all over the benches.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway. So, I noticed that the hole's about a 632 size, except 632 won't go in. So I'm wondering, oh, is it 648, which is a scope mounting screw? We'll try one of those. It won't even start. All right. So I go to the internet. And I try and find what they say the number two plate from HK is supposed to be threaded. Well, they tell me it's 632. I happen to know differently of first hands-on experience this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I call HK, and they're like, it might be 440.
Might be.
It might be. And it's a guy with a German accent. I mean, I'm assuming he might know.
Achtung!
So I run down to the store, and I grab myself a set of 440 screws.
They don't fit.
They're too tiny. They drop right in the hole.
Yeah.
So they're not 440. Climb on a message board and had a conversation with a guy who was very, I mean, he HK Pro 458 or whatever the hell his name was. And he assures me that they are 632. So I'm like, all right. And I get the tap out and start threading. And it doesn't bind up, but it's not freely spinning. So I'm using some oil and I'm chasing these threads.
Right.
Turns out they are 632. However, the bottom of the plate's not drilled all the way through.
Oh.
And the threads fall apart about a 16th of an inch in. That's not enough.
No.
So I drill, tap, I make the holes 632. And nowhere in any of the kit is a 632 screw included. So if I didn't happen to have some on my bench, I would be then going back to the store looking for 632. When you want steel, hardened, black.
Yep, with a pan head.
Pan head with a preferably Allen or a Torx head.
You want a number 10 Torx.
If you can find them. You can't find them in the hardware stores here.
Oh, no, no, no.
No, that's what I was going to say. We have Ace Hardware and Sutherland. Yeah. So now everybody out there that does construction is now giggling at you.
Oh, absolutely. And it gets worse because you can buy them in the quarter inch, the 5/16, or the 11 millimeter. Why are we mixing 632, which is a standard thread size,
mm-hmm.
with a metric length?
Yeah.
That's on the label at this damn hardware store in the parts bin.
Well, that fits that transgender scope that Jason has.
So I buy the 11 millimeters, and they're about a 16th too long. So I have to
take the Dremel, cut them down.
I have to cut them down, and then I have to rechase those threads with a die.
Yep.
To not make them not thread right. And so what should have been, hey, I'll pull the right screws out of the box with the right plate.
Right.
Attach it and go to work. Took 4 hours.
I was going to say, yeah, that's a half a day project by the time you chased everything down. And I had to go get, I feel you with the stupid screw thing because I wanted to make sure I had extras because of the same issue. Like, you know, they send you the screws, but because of the plate, because of the optic, they're not the right length or they're not, this doesn't, whatever. So I went to go finally buy an assortment and I looked and looked and looked and I finally found them at Fastenal.
Can you buy one or two at Fastenal?
Well, you can, but here's the thing.
You have to buy it by the goddamn pallet.
No. I mean, they let me buy, like, you know, I was buying like 10 of each, which they let me do. But here's the problem with Fastenal is you have to have a commercial account. And you can't pay with cash.
Why are we making this so hard?
I don't know. But, I mean, talk about, like, making things way harder than they need to be. I mean, as a business owner, I'm not going to not accept a form of payment.
No, take my money.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter how it comes.
Shut up and take my money.
Correct.
But yeah, I it wasn't an argument, but I'm sitting there laughing with the cashier and I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You don't take cash.
Yeah. They have no way to, I mean, handle cash. Even no. They don't have a register.
No, it's all either a card or an account. And we ran into this when we were in Atlanta for the NRA. Nobody there took cash.
Well, I mean, does the Fastenal store get robbed that often?
I wouldn't think
so. No, but think of the employees and how most places who have registers, they have to be able to balance their register with the transactions. They have gotten rid of the problem.
if you can work through their Dewey Decimal System to find all those little bitty screws, I'm pretty sure you can count change.
Notice last time we were in Fastenal, it wasn't just anybody. There was just that one person that took us through the screws. Everybody else was behind the counter with, like, dough in the headlight eyeballs. And
God, it's like worse than an automotive parts house.
Oh, my God. Yeah, don't get me started on those.
Well, I'm going to go there. I recently had to replace the batteries in my camper.
Hey, so did I.
So, I bought them last year. And when I bought them, I remarked to them that they had a sign that said, February of 22 on the side of them, a little sticker.
Right, right.
Clearly, it wasn't 2022 anymore. Yeah. Right? So, they sold them to me anyway. Said, there's a warranty on them. Don't worry about it. Because I bought the high-end, deep-cycle batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they went tits up over the winter. Whatever. I take them back in there.
Hey, pro tip, take them off the camper if you're going to store it outside.
That's a good idea. But I go in there, and I say, all right, so can you test these batteries for me? And they come out with their little tester, and they put them on the tester, and sure enough, they're both junk.
Right.
So she hauls them inside, and she starts looking at them. She goes, when did you buy them? And I said, last year, about this time, maybe June-ish. She goes, okay, well. She gets with the manager. The manager decides to warranty him. It's all going to be good. He goes in the back and goes, but can you wait till Thursday? Because I don't want to sell you the ones I've got right now because they have a date problem too.
Okay. Well, so at least he was
taking care of me. I get them. I put them in. They won't take a charge. So here I am now with two big deep cycle batteries again that are potentially bad. So at least they'll warranty them, but now I've got to haul them back down there.
I want to say that maybe you should have the camper gone through first. Because this is like strike two.
It is strike two. And I mean, I'm going to have them check the batteries. If the batteries are fine, then it's my camper. That's fine. But they have a way to test this stuff. But it's frustrating. All I want to do is sit in the woods with the lawn chair and a cigar. That's it.
Oh, I know. Our camper this year, and ours is only like 3 years old. And I swear to God, I've had to go through and fix every system in it. The good thing is now I have just about every spare part I could possibly need. And if something goes wrong, I pretty much know exactly what it is and how to fix it. So I can do it quickly and on the fly. But still,
so
the same thing.
You become a RV mechanic.
Yeah, pretty much.
You didn't want to do that.
No. No, it's supposed to be recreational vehicle, not a...
When they sell you an RV, the makers of the RV should make sure you don't have to work on it that much.
Well, you have to understand, too, they make them out of cardboard and pixie dust.
Can we just stop that?
And I'm pretty sure ours was built on a Friday with leftover pieces or something.
That's all of them. I swear to God, it's all of them.
Mine was not horribly well constructed either. I totally get it.
And we've kind of talked about this, like... We don't camp. Like, campers these days, they're designed to go down the highway, and you go to a campground, and you park on a concrete pad with hookups. That's not how we camp. We go up. I mean, we've taken our camper places it probably should not have gone.
Dude, if I wanted to camp like that, I'd just move into a fucking trailer park and be done with it.
Agreed. That's not camping.
That's not the way we do it.
No.
The RV market overall typically does drive down the road, find a nice KOA, pull through a slot.
Well, that's for those big, long bus-looking things with the 19 slide-outs, six-bedroom home on wheels. That's what that's for.
True.
Well,
true.
Yeah. But so well, anyway, back to screws.
Back to screws. Moving forward as an optics supplier, I'm going to choose to just provide the screws that they may need in pairs. M5s, M4s, M3s, 632s, 648s. It doesn't cost you 30 cents a set to get it done.
Right.
And now the customer is going to have what he needs when he opens the box.
Right. And I mean, most of the optics that I bought, I mean, they, especially like the pistol optics, they've got three or four different sets of screws. The one that frustrates me, especially with the HK, is that you have to buy the plate separate. Every other gun that I've gotten, either the slide cut is already drilled to accept, two or three different configurations, or it comes with the plates that you need.
See, and there's a lot of pistols out there. That's not the case.
I know it.
Because Glock, I thought Glock didn't come with the plates. You had to buy
you have to
which
buy the
plates
set.
You want.
Well, but you buy the MOS kit, and it has all of them.
It has all of them.
But now you got random shit you don't need.
Agreed.
But you might change your optic down the line.
That's why I have a drawer labeled Jason's Shit. Because I'm full of stuff that came with something that I really didn't need to use.
Right.
And the scope mount guys, the aren't any better or different.
No.
We've gone from 648 screws now to something they call Nesca Bay.
A what?
Which is an 840 screw. And I will tell you, you buy a set of tally rings to go onto your rifle, and if you don't know which screws are in your action, which holes,
mm-hmm.
you are probably going back to the store and exchanging them for a set that is right.
Right.
Can we just standardize and have, I mean, because it wasn't like the 648 was a bad thing.
No.
The 840 is not offering you that much more protection.
No.
I mean, if you torque them right, this is the last thing you worry about.
Right.
So pick one. Weatherby.
Pick one,
Remington.
I agree. I would like to see them standardized. Ruger makes me crazy because Ruger only accepts Ruger rings.
Oh, yeah. So there's another thing. If you look at the folks like Ruger and then you contrast that to Bagheera, Remington, Weatherby, they're all using that same footprint as far as action goes.
Right.
But Ruger uses their own proprietary action,
mm-hmm.
and good on them, but then they sell you $60 single rings.
Yep.
So you're $120 a pair.
Yep.
Now, they're nice rings, don't get me wrong, but $120 a pair is just dumb.
I agree. Now, and I'm going to caveat all everything that we're saying, because, yes, we're kind of on a rant here. And we're not saying that, you know, HK, Ruger, Weatherby, whoever it might be, right? These are not bad companies. They're not bad products. It's just that you have to be aware as a buyer what you're getting into.
Well,
you've got to know that, like Ruger, if you buy a Ruger rifle, it's mm-hmm. going to be proprietary rings.
Right. But that's asking a lot of a general customer. So I'm going to lay this at the product development guys at those companies, right? They are supposed to be the experts. And they're supposed to make the customer's experience engaging with their gear easy, seamless, and a pleasure. And right now, it's anything but.
Well, and look at the gun counter help. You think that's going to sort things out
for
you?
Oh, my God.
I honestly think sometimes the gun counter help, they may share a brain between four or five of them.
Yeah, I learned that today. I taught a class today, and the guns that my students brought out did not fit them, so we were trying to figure out what size gun fit, and I will tell you, a full-size man shooting a SIG Micro 1911, it doesn't work.
Gun counter help.
Yes.
They recommend and push products that give them a spiff.
Yep.
So they're getting paid in a kickback in some measure or form to present that thing out from underneath the glass. It's not necessarily the right product for what you're looking for or doing. It's the one that's going to pay them. So back to responsibility being on the buyer.
Yes.
Which is upside down in the equation of what should be, because we go to the gun counter to ask the guys that deal with this every day, what is the right piece for me?
And I don't think they can answer that. Because
they don't know. That's
no,
the
they don't. Because, well, and look at most gun counter help today. You're not dealing with, you know, the 50, 60-year-old Marine that has a gun shop that knows his weaponry, knows how to shoot, and is capable of teaching someone. So he can look at, he can ask the questions, what are you doing with it? You know, and make that recommendation that's going to fit you. The kids today, you know, first of all, they half of them look like they fell face first into a tackle box. And I don't think half of them have ever shot a gun.
Well, and then, like you said, the proprietary pieces of fit.
Yes.
When they talk you into a gun, do they even know
they
that
don't.
It's proprietary?
I don't think they have a clue.
They don't have a inkling because of what they're talking
about. And most of the time, the store doesn't carry it, probably because the store doesn't even know.
But a lot of times, I see stores, and we got one in town, and it's a good store. They have a pretty decent cross-section across what the market is offering, but they don't get into the minutia. They don't handle parts well. They don't handle accessories well. So if you're looking to do anything other than make a gun purchase, this is probably going to give you more heartburn than it's worth looking there.
And it sucks for us because there's a lot of times I'm looking for either a very specific part or there's a lot of choices to that part, and I'm not entirely sure what I want, what I need, what's going to fit, what's going to work with what I have. So sometimes it's nice if I can, I would love to like kind of, let me make sure this is going to fit before I buy it.
The whole entire point behind a brick and mortar store in today's environment is so you can see it, touch, feel it, and kind of understand it before you buy it.
Right.
If I was just looking for something I could look up online, I'd do that online. It'd be fine.
Exactly.
I go to the store to put my hands on.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the store to talk to a guy that hopefully has some experience either in selling it or using it. And those days are gone. The counter help's not helpful.
No. No, and when you order online, you know, a lot of, and I know you've had this experience, I'll buy something thinking it's one thing, it shows up, and I'm like, what the hell is this? Well, you had that experience with a flag.
Yeah, most of that's my fault because, you know, I choose to shop with my budget wallet. And I use Temu and Wish for some of that stuff. And yeah, so be very, very careful about a 12 by 36 flag.
Because it might be millimeters.
I wanted a bit, yeah. It showed up and it was a napkin. It wasn't good. No, but you're absolutely on to something. When we go to look at the products, if you're buying it with the intent to augment it later, start your research on the augment by the time you're purchasing it, because you're going to have to source screws, plates, batteries even sometimes.
Yep.
And those are those unexpected, nah, crap, I got to go get this. I'm all ready to go. All I need is that one piece.
Uh-huh. And that one piece, and of course, here, we order it, and it might show up in 7 to 10 days.
Well, yeah. And I love where we live, but it is the true fact of where we live.
Yeah.
So Go further. The HK tactical that I've got.
Well, hang on. Before you go down this tangent, let's take a quick break because we're going to pivot here and still stay on the HK, but
beans, bullets, Band-Aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. Enter Deer Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first-ever reflex optic in blue, your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations. Using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics. On target. Under budget.
All right. So your HK saga continues still.
So I get the optic finally settled and addressed. Right? Now I turn my attention to a hush.
Well, yeah, you got to have a shusher.
The barrel is threaded. It is prime for it. It's a great platform for this.
Yeah, except you bought a German gun.
I did. And it's a 13x1 left-handed thread.
Yep.
German retardedness. If you're going to sell that in the U.S. market, swap the barrel over to a half by 28 thread, please.
That's what I did. I just bought a new barrel.
You bought a new barrel. Where'd you get your barrel from? Because I worried about throwing a new barrel in the HK, because that's the German barrel that is most likely out of the Walther factory of barrels.
Yep.
And it's nice.
Well, I believe I got mine from like hkparts.com.
That's
which okay. is legit HK Parts.
But let's talk about hkparts.com, shall we?
Oh, Lord. So I bought all my parts for this evolution of this pistol from them. They've been great to deal with.
Oh, yeah. No.
But I got a thread adapter from Ka Precision.
Okay.
Through HK Parts.
Yep. Right?
And it is from the 13 by 1 left-hand thread to half 28 regular sane thread. Okay. And it threads on the barrel of the gun perfectly. It threads the suppressor on perfectly. And I'm no dummy. I spent the time before I took the thread adapter to the barrel, and I dropped a 9mm projectile through the hole just to make sure, because it looked tight to me, but it dropped through. It had room to move. It was not tight. I went, okay, so let's try it. I thread this thing on, and I take two rounds. Jack the round in, aim the pistol, and it's a little overpressured. You feel the recoil in your hand, right? I didn't think too much about it. I looked at it a little bit. It didn't eject my piece of brass, which was odd. It happens with ammo, but, I mean, it felt recoiled, which was weird that it didn't eject.
Right.
So I rack another round in. I shoot the damn thing, and the thread adapter cracks exactly in half. Suppressor falls to the concrete in front of me. Yeah. So now I've got a broken part. My suppressor was fine. There was no baffle strike, but nothing happened to my gun. But now my thread adapter that makes, you know, the happiness of supposed to be being quiet, not operable again. So I take my thread adapter in parts off. I take pictures of it, and I send it out to Ka Precision, directly to the people who made the part, not HK Parts, because they just sold me the part.
Right.
And it was a very simple email. This happened to me in two rounds. I look forward to seeing what your solution is.
Right.
I got nothing back. And that was like 8 o'clock in the morning to now. So either they're not paying attention or they don't want to talk to me.
It makes me wonder if this is a reoccurring problem.
Well, I'm going to fix that because I am now buying a hub adapter for my suppressor through Yankee Hill.
To fit the 13-1.
To fit the 13-1 left-handed. And I'm going to direct thread my suppressor on. But I'm out the $48 it is for that thread adapter. And now another $82 for the hub for my suppressor.
Or how much was the barrel?
I want to say it was like $120, $130 for the barrel.
I'm just trying to work with the equipment barrel HK provided me. So, hey, HK developers out there, if it's going into the U.S. market, would you make it a thread that we understand, please? You can even call us the retarded kids. It's fine. We don't care.
That's fine.
We all know if it comes from German, well, they're probably right anyway.
Yeah, well.
Stop it.
I know, and it makes you crazy because those VP9s, they are nice guns. I think between the three of us, we've got four or five of them.
We do.
Different configurations, but they are nice guns. We all shoot them. We all love them. But yeah, they've got, and I don't even want to say problems, but they have some things that make you scratch your head.
They do. So, scratching your head. Another part I bought for this HK VP9.
Oh my God, here we go.
Was the enhanced mag release lever.
Okay.
So it's an ambi lever. The HK VP9 Tactical has an ambi lever anyway.
Yes.
But the enhanced one was supposed to be a little bit wider flare.
Oh, so you could reach it with your stubby thumb.
That's correct. And, I mean, you got to make it fit you, right? And it should have some purchase on it, so they put some grooves on it.
Right.
So I get this thing. I pull it out of the package, and I line it up with where it's going to go on the current pistol. It's the exact same fucking size. There is no flare to it whatsoever. This is the enhanced version.
So, apparently, the enhanced version comes on the tactical. So, what's the non-enhanced version look like?
The factory one, evidently. There's no grooves on the factory one, so there is a little bit more purchase. But it's supposed to have a flared sidewall on this lever, and it doesn't. So, I haven't installed that yet.
That makes me wonder if you got the wrong part.
Well, I can tell you the description on the package and what my invoice says.
Well, I would go back and look at the picture of it.
You know those pictures suck.
I know they do. But
or look up what the gun actually comes with. Maybe it is coming with this special part, and it does get worse from there.
Yeah, it might. I was absolutely blown away. I was like, well, why would I waste my time installing that? It's really not going to help my stubby little fingers reach that.
No.
So I'm just going to have to train different.
Yeah?
It'll be fine. But yeah, $65 for a little bitty chunk of metal that's not different than anything in the factory. So it's not that enhanced, evidently.
No. No. And I'm seeing stuff like this more and more. And I don't know if it's because of COVID and the residual issues from supply chain and the tariff issues. I don't know, but I have seen a lot of downhill when it comes to parts, accessories, not being able, you know, and I've been running into a lot of, you know, out of stock, which really kind of makes me crazy. Or, you know, they stop making it. And it's...
I don't like using the COVID thing as an excuse. Come on. It's 2025 now. That was 2020.
It was a catastrophic disruption in supply chain for everybody.
But it's 2025 now. Get off your ass. Make some shit.
Well, and to be fair, yes, you're right. But on the other side of it, cash flow sucked through those years for a lot of folks. And so spending their money on accessories and things that may be sold slower may not be a priority.
Yeah, but we're talking about out of stock. That's not the final purchaser. That's the dude behind the machine not coming to work because we're still doing things by Zoom 5 years after the fake pandemic.
The dude behind the machine took the jab because his HR department told him he had to, and now he didn't make it. They're looking for a new dude behind the machine.
And those guys don't want to work.
A lot of them don't. It's the employment environment out there is actually pretty anorexic.
It sucks. And it's not helping that during COVID, in order to stay open, a lot of places automated, and they eliminated that dude behind the machine.
But what we're talking about here is product development engines inside companies.
Yep.
Hiring a guy based on the mirror test. You've got breath. Cool, you go to work.
Or
they
is
don't know
it
anything.
Common Core kids are in the field.
That's scarier yet.
Right.
We need engineers and product developers that understand engineering. Business folks that understand timelines and manufacturing metrics.
I don't know.
You're not getting that for a guy that's going to make less than $20 an hour. You're just not.
And I have heard the phrase. I have had somebody tell me, we don't really do lead times. Excuse me?
Lead times are everything.
I mean,
time and money is linked.
Yes. And, you know, and I'm trying to develop a class that requires equipment to be there on time in the right quantities, and you're telling me you don't really do lead times?
Well,
how am I supposed to schedule?
You had to commit advertising dollars to the fact that you were promoting the class, and if they aren't going to be able to produce it, what do you say in your ad?
Yeah, you might get your stuff.
We're going to teach with a Sky pistol. Oh, by the way, they're out of business now.
Yeah.
Well, HK, they were floored. You were the number one salesman for them.
Oh
one
my
year.
God! And they got so mad at me.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and that was kind of one of those, back to HK, maybe it's a German thing, but they got mad at me. When we first rolled out with the pistol optics course, we were using the VP9 and, I went to HK and talked to him and got the whole deal worked out, and it was great. But I think the guy that I talked to thought, oh, I'm going to sell 10 or 12 of these. And when I submitted my third purchase order for like 40, they freaked out and got mad because, well, we can't produce these this fast. And my response was, I thought that's what you did.
Your HK, 40 pistols should not be a problem.
It should not be a problem.
I mean, you went to a Glock clone at one point.
Uh-huh.
And they couldn't keep up.
Nope.
I mean, it's an open source Glock clone, for Christ's sake.
I know. And it makes them nuts. And I don't know what these people think, because now I've done this enough that I actually have companies coming to me wanting to come on board and do this. And because they're seeing, like, every time I launch one of these, I do 100, 120 guns in a year.
Right.
And not even in a year, usually in a season, in about a six-month span. Distributors don't sell that many of one model.
That's a spooky state of the environment in the industry as well.
Yeah, but I mean, even when at its height, I was selling more of a single model gun than some distributors.
That's crazy.
And of course, what makes a lot of these manufacturers upset is I'm only selling one model. They want me selling,
But you're teaching a class.
Right.
The point is all the students are on the same equipment.
Right.
No, that's retarded.
And they understand the concept, but then when the quantity, and this has been my whole thing the last couple of years doing this, talking to manufacturers who want to come and play, is, all right, part of your responsibility here is help me promote. Because if the manufacturer actually promoted these classes, it wouldn't be 120, it'd be 1,000.
You'd have to hire more instructors.
Oh, absolutely.
And you're absolutely right, because their marketing engine is good.
Yeah.
I'm saying their product development engine needs some babysitting. Because they're just not thinking through the customer's experience. And the sales guy, you had a deal worked out with, what was it, Stoger?
Yeah,
which
was Stoger.
A Beretta knockoff brand kind
yep,
of thing.
Yep, Beretta owns them.
And they had the deal worked out. And then they went, oh, wait. We have a territory sales rep that
yep.
needs some love.
Yep, and he nicks the deal twice.
Because he wanted his commission and cut out of it.
Yeah.
But you'd already made the deal.
Well, and he was mad because he already repped HK, and I already had that existing deal with HK. This sales rep gets involved, and he nuked the entire deal, not once, but twice.
He doesn't want to sell guns.
No.
Clearly.
Well, he wants to sell guns. But he wants to put so many restrictions on me that I can't do it effectively. It makes it to where it's not worth it for me to do it.
And we had this conversation with him. I mean, he shoots the Night Force ELR match. And he walks up and introduces himself every year as if I don't know him. We have the conversation. He goes, oh, yeah, I remember. And he sheepishly walks away. He knows he did wrong.
Yeah. Well, and what made me crazy about it is he nuked the whole deal the first time. And I think it was because he was thrown into a situation without all the information.
Without any control over the situation.
Well, he was told, oh, go make this happen. Go set this up. But he didn't have all the facts behind it. Well, after I talked to him the first time and I gave him all the facts, he nukes the deal. So I go back to vice president of Beretta, who set the whole thing up to begin with, and went, okay, your sales guy, he needs some direction here because I don't think he quite understands what we're trying to do. And I get from the VP, okay, I'll talk to him and let him know what's going on, and I'll have him call you back, and we'll get this all sorted out. Calls me back and goes down the exact same path he did the first time. And so I throw my hands up in the air, and I'm like, can't do it.
Well, he was nuking the deal because he didn't get his piece out of the middle.
I think that's what it was.
And he didn't have control over it, and you were going to outpace his volume.
Yep.
And he gets judged by that as a sales rep.
Yep.
So you were toxic to his work ethic.
I'm sorry.
He's toxic to his clients.
Absolutely. But he was going to get outpaced by a single buyer that he had no control over. This was about saving his job. This wasn't about selling guns.
Well, he was repping for more than one company.
There was a conflict.
Yeah, there was some conflict.
So what does it freaking matter?
Well, if you looked at, say, you had 100 students that year.
Yeah.
100 guns is probably four times the volume he would have moved that year.
Not our problem.
Agreed. The brand should have overrode him.
This was built above his head. He should have had no say in the deal.
Well, territories, and they protect them pretty darn...
Pretty sure Riverton, Wyoming is not his territory.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's in the area. It's his. He's got everything from Colorado through Montana.
Because the only time I see him is at the ELR match.
Yeah, I never see him. sales reps are an interesting breed. They get a product line, and what position you are when they go to see the buyer out of the bag kind of drives what kind of volume you do.
Mm-hmm.
And how dare you sell something that's supposedly their brand, because that was their deal to be made, right? They want their commission and chunk off of it.
Yep.
It's a territorialism thing, nothing more. And it's
then, hey, fat boy, get off the couch.
He is chubby. He was just protecting his job, because this one event would have four times sold more than he does in a year. And it's nothing more than that young kid coming onto the job and then all the old guys going, hey, slow down. You're making us look bad. Because that's what it was. You were making him look bad.
Oh, I know. And I think the thing that frustrated me the most about that whole situation was that Stoger had gone directly to Michael Bain to get in touch with me to make this deal.
Because they saw what you did with HK.
Yeah, yeah. They saw what I did, and they went, hey, here's a niche.
Right.
Nobody's doing this.
Right.
And, and someone that is, you know, extremely well-respected in the industry helped to broker this deal, and this one little guy just screwed the whole thing.
Well, the guy that helped broker the deal had more sway with the brand.
Oh, yeah.
Than pretty much anybody.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't have, because the big dude at Stoger went to Michael Bain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to say his name?
Went to Michael Bain to get a hold of him.
That's right.
To do this class.
That's right.
And then they're going to let some peon that makes like 8% can it?
They did. They let that happen.
They did. They did. And I felt bad because, you know, this was something that Michael actually wanted to be involved in.
It would have worked.
Oh, it would have been great.
And it still could. And I will say there's hope there.
There is.
I have had experience recently with a firearms company that does a lot of imports.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I have had a dealer change on who I talk to in product development 7 times in the course of 8 months.
They have been trying. I mean, I've been in talks with them too. I know who you're talking about. I've been talks with them for 3 years. We've been trying to get this off the ground. But they keep having so much turmoil within the company and changeover that we just can't get it done.
I introduce myself and re-educate a buyer
and
a product development
about every 6 months.
Is it even that long?
Yeah, it might not be.
I have had 4 guys since July.
Oh, my God.
I bet you the name plaques on their desk have, like, stickers on them because they change so often.
Magnets.
They just pop a new name on there for tomorrow.
Oh, no, they say TBD. To be determined. They don't even put their names on their shit anymore.
Won't be here long.
Yeah. And I think, to kind of bring all this around, I think, unfortunately, everything that we've talked about today, it really is kind of a sad insight into the state of the industry right now. It's kind of scary.
Well, the state of the industry it's in bad shambles.
It's rough.
I equate it to sitting on a couch that's engulfed in flames going, it's fine.
That's how I live my life. What are you talking about?
So you come through COVID. Economics were bad. Supply chains were disrupted to the point of restart in a lot of situations. And the economics of the country haven't gotten that much better.
No.
You start to see gas prices. You start to see egg and milk and grocery prices spike. Mm-hmm. People don't have the income they used to have, or the disposable thereof.
Yeah, the disposable is the key word.
And everything that we do in this firearms world, it's disposable income.
It is. Absolutely is.
And so they just don't have it.
Nope.
They want it, And so the interest's there, but nobody's buying.
No.
For example, our local store, they've had Black Friday be one of their bigger days of the year, right? Pre-COVID, it was a $500,000 day for them.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, it was a $10,000 day.
Whew.
That's a dramatic drop in what we're seeing in disposable income.
Well, I think disposable income's a big part of it. I think the other issue is the firearms industry has experienced basically panic buying since 2013.
2008.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go with that. But
Obama was the best gun salesman we ever had.
Absolutely. But when 2013 came about, the Sandy Hook.
They started banging the drum on gun control.
I mean, it's been... The buying in the firearms industry has been at a panic pace for 10 years.
Agreed.
I think we're at a point now where it's like everybody's got what they want.
Nobody's worried that they're coming for your guns anymore.
There's that too.
That worry's done and over. I mean, people were stockpiling.
Yeah.
Because it would be currency later.
Yep.
But that's not happening anymore.
No. No. It kind of sucks because usually at that point we would start to see an uptick in the training side of things.
Or accessory side of things.
Yep.
Or ammo side of things.
Yep.
Ammo is going to be a thing because we're at war with China, right?
Right.
Well, nitrocellulose, which is a key component of powder,
mm-hmm.
is going to be hard to get. So ammunition is headed for a crunch.
Yep.
If you don't have it, get it.
And it's been tough the last few years.
Yeah, when has it not been in a crunch for a while?
It's been a decade since it's not been in a crunch.
Yep.
Between the backyard hoarder and then the supply chain issues.
Yeah,
and
well.
Ammunition companies, they load what's popular, right? So try and find 260 Remington right now on the shelf.
Okay.
It's been replaced with 6.5 Creedmoor.
Right.
It's just, they're not loading it anymore.
Nope.
So the market trends and the fickle fancy of what's out there, that plays too.
Well, and even components for you reloaders. I think anybody that reloads knows it's tough to find components.
I giggled yesterday because I was loading some 6.5 PRC, and I pulled a batch of large rifle Magnum primers out.
Okay.
And the retailer I bought them from individually by the 100 sleeve.
Oh, yeah. It's probably like 97 cents.
He stickered them, and it was $1.25 for 100 primers.
Yeah.
Those are a little bit old.
Yeah, I'd say because I think the last, because I usually buy them by the brick, so 1,000 primers.
$10 to $12 a 100 now.
They're $300 for a brick.
Yeah.
It's tough. And even being able to just find them. So it's kind of one of those situations where it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm paying this much, but oh my God, I actually found some.
Which has curtailed the going and shooting, the target, the plinking.
Yep.
People don't do it because they don't have the ammo budget.
No.
They just don't.
No. It sucks. Although I have noticed that retail, factory ammunition is actually starting to come down to being like almost reasonable again.
Yeah. There's a reset happening. And because if you want people to buy, you lower the price.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I picked up some hunting ammo last week, and I run some pretty high zoot stuff. It's that Federal Terminal Ascent,
mm-hmm.
and I'm paying $50 for 20 now, which 2 years ago it was 100.
Yeah, that's a pretty good reset.
So I mean, it factory ammo is actually becoming kind of reasonable, and I think it's what you're saying. You know, people kind of run out of the disposable income; they're not buying in bulk anymore.
And I talk to retailers all the time, and I ask them how things are going, and we get on the topic of ammunition and guns, and what we have seen is somebody will buy a new gun,
mm-hmm.
and they'll buy a box of something for the new gun.
Yep.
They don't buy a case like they used to.
Right.
And they'll go shoot it a couple times, and then put the gun away.
Yeah, and then it sits for 10 years.
Right. And that's kind of how things are going. Gun sales may be up, but look at the ammunition. The use of it's not.
Yep. Yep. Sad, and hopefully things pick up, but I have hope. I think people are going to return back to, you know, give it a year, but I think people are going to go back to start having fun with guns again.
I hope so. They are fun.
They are fun.
Handle them safely and responsible. They're fun.
Yep. So, whew, we kind of went way over time. You ranted.
I had a thing today, so yeah.
So, I guess until next week, God, blame the accessories.
Blame the accessories.